Hello, it's Anna.
Hi, it's Shireen.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous, episode 73. Wow.
We did the hand thing at the end of that note.
The record deals are pouring in.
Yeah, I'm just, oh my God, my phone is blowing up. Hello.
So what are you going to talk about today?
Today I'm talking about one of my idols recently, Jamila Jamil. She's a feminist, the best example of one in my opinion, and I want to talk about her work as a feminist and her crusade against body shaming and body altering and in particular, Photoshop, airbrushing, and detox teas.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about the darker relationship with my father, the darker side that maybe you guys have experienced with your own immigrant parents. So it's gonna get a little heavy, bitches.
Yeah, but it's amazing and beautiful. And then at the end, we talk about a mental illness because that's what we both know very well. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we are
episode 73.
You got it. 73. What a time to be here with you.
Farting.
Anna, why do you gotta ruin a good moment? Why do you gotta ruin a good moment?
Oh my God, she's lost her mind!
I'm so sorry. Episode 73. Thanks for being here.
I've exhausted myself with that crazy laugh, and I apologize to everyone out there.
That was a real cackle.
I apologize to our engineer, who's probably like, "You're peaking."
Our engineer, who is your boyfriend.
Our engineer, who is my slave. You're peaking.
But yeah, today is a Tuesday, so it's kind of early in the week for us to record. We spent the weekend together, though, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We spend almost every day of the week. Actually, yesterday we had our break, but I was texting you a lot.
You were.
I tried a new thing where I texted you in the morning, "Good morning, little honey bunch angel willow," or some bullshit like that.
And I was
that.
Like, hey.
Yeah. And then I told her, "I'm trying something new." And she was like,
No, but we spent every single day. On Thursday, we went to a holiday party together. On Friday, we went to Sophie's birthday party together, and we recorded. And then on Saturday,
we went to another holiday
party. And then on Sunday, we recorded a podcast for Tamer's podcast with his mom.
Tamer Catan.
And the episode that I'm on is out tomorrow, But this doesn't come out until...
So it was last week. So it came out last week, so go listen to it.
So we're recording this last Tuesday, so it came out on our tomorrow, which is Wednesday of last week, but I used to listen to. And it was really fun. The host is Tamer and his mom. It's hosted by Tamer and his mom, Kitty. She is adorable. She's just... an angel sent from heaven.
It's called They Tried to Bury Us.
Yes, it's called They Tried to Bury Us. Look it up on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. She is truly just a gem, and we both had the best time. So my episode is already out. You should go listen to it. And Anna's episodes will come out on Wednesday, I think.
Yes, I think.
Yeah,
pretty sure. I have no confirmation, but I'll let y'all know on the Twitter and or Grams.
Yeah, and I hope you guys enjoyed the Caitlin episode, my episode with Caitlin Stacey.
You know what? I enjoyed it so heavily.
You listened to it?
I will have.
Sorry.
Well, this is awkward.
I was
trying to pretend we're in the future.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
I didn't want to listen to it before because I wanted to listen to it when it drops, so it would just add to our downloads.
Oh, word. We do need those downloads. Yeah. We do need those downloads.
Look, we have to do our own work here.
Yeah.
I am 200 of the downloads.
Yeah.
I have 200 phones.
I'm trying to catch up. Anna's really beating me in that front. But...
every week, I download our app on my 200 different phones that I keep at my burners.
You gotta do what you gotta do to keep the show alive, you know? You gotta hustle.
What if I really did it? Just like a closet. Closet full of burners where I'm like just downloading
and
that.
I'm like on the other side being like, Anna, we have 200 people today. And you're like, yeah.
That's so depressing.
That's really sad.
Yeah, but totally, that was all a joke. It's not real.
No, but really, but really, I don't know if it was that obvious when I talked to her in the episode that came out, but I am like low key obsessed with her, and I think she's amazing. And I've known about her for so long, so getting to talk to her in person and like meeting her that day was a really big deal for me.
Yeah, it was funny because when she finally turned around, noticed that you'd been following her for weeks, you were like, "Would you do my podcast?" And she was like, "Yeah, sure. Have you been following me?" And you're like, "No, this is
that's
just
not
a
what happened. That's not what happened.
That's true. That's not what happened." But how funny would that be? That Shereen really had funny. Just been following her for so long.
Yeah, she's like, I'm outside her house, just like waiting. Yeah, just waiting for her to notice me.
That's a great time to plug. We did her husband's podcast.
Oh, yeah. Lucas Neff, he co-hosts a podcast with Barry Rothbart.
Correct.
And it's called Saving the World with Barry and Lucas, because that's what their names are. And that was the podcast that I got really high on.
Yeah, we got stone, bone.
And it was really fun, actually. I really enjoyed
it.
So go look up the episode.
I was like cry laughing for the majority of that episode. It was just so silly.
It was really fun. I really liked it. It was a really fun time. And usually I get anxious if I smoke weed, but that time I was like on a fucking another level.
Well, it was good vibes. And also at the end, or afterwards, when we were walking to our car, Kareen's, because Car and Shereen. Shereen turned to me and goes, I should just smoke weed. And I was like, yeah. Like, it was just such
I'm finally catching
funny
on.
Funny moment of you just being like, huh? Wow. And I was like, yeah, Shereen, dude, welcome, dude.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I like weed. I just, like, sometimes I get too in my head about it.
You're not a recreational smoker.
I've never bought or purchased my own weed. I've only smooched off of others.
You're lucky, because I'm an officer of the law.
Okay.
Well, it's legal now. I did this whole podcast to try and get you to
admit it. What if we lose people from following us? Not that they know we're druggies.
We're not druggies. We smoke some weed, man.
They probably think we do heroin.
Well, all our Middle Eastern parents do.
No, that's what I was trying
to
get at. That's what I was trying to get at.
Tamar on heroin.
Yeah. Tamar was also someone that we both talked to last week. We interviewed him, and his episode hasn't come out for a couple of weeks, but he just made a funny reference to his mom, like, thinking, like, just, like, seeing, like, a homeless person or, like, anyone that's struggling on the TV and just being like, they're on heroin.
Yeah, like, they're just on drugs.
It's a quick assumption which from is any like, immigrant
yeah,
parent.
They just, yeah. They're like, why would you do that? They're on drugs.
Yeah, exactly.
My mom did the same I was thing. Home late. You're on drugs. Yeah. Like, what?
But I got a tattoo my parents didn't like. My mom, like, went to me in private. She was like, what were you on? And I was like, mama, you just don't like it. It's okay.
Why do you think I was on drugs?
But also, I was stone cold sober. I don't like it that much either, but I have a tattoo now.
Drugs.
But yeah, I hope you guys liked it. Give us some love if you did. She's on Instagram, and the podcast is everywhere, so go listen to it if you haven't yet. Give us some downloads, please. Anything else you want to talk about before I jump into this?
This is now imagine Jordan Peele gif with all the sweat coming down his face.
Also, this is kind of sad post like now that the creator SpongeBob is dead, but my mom would always sing like she would always hum a tune. And it sounded like, da-na-na-na. It sounded like the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song.
Oh.
And I always thought it was so strange. And then recently during Thanksgiving, I was like, Mama, why do you always sing this or like hum the SpongeBob theme song? She was like, it's Jeopardy!
Oh.
And apparently it was do-do-do, but the way she hummed it sounded like do-do-do-do-do. Does that make sense? It was just funny.
That's really funny because this reminds me of a story from my youth. When I was a kid, do you remember that song? What was it like Papa Roach would be like, suffocation, no breathing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I would always sing that song, but I'd be like, suffocation, no breathing. And my brother one day was like, why are you singing that? That's you so sing it like you're singing it like bananas in pajamas. And I was just like, huh.
It's just so disturbing to think of a little girl singing suffocating.
But I was like, suffocation, no breathing.
That's really
and my
funny.
Brother would be like, you're not supposed to sing it like bananas in pajamas. Like, it's intense. And
that's
I was
really
like,
funny.
Oh, okay.
That's really funny.
I don't know why that reminded me of that.
That's really, really funny.
Bananas in pajamas. Do you remember those?
Yeah. I never really watched it, though.
They were fucking fools.
I was more a Barney person. I was one of those kids. I watched Barney.
I think I did both.
Oh.
I think I just, like, watched whatever was on.
Yeah.
I was a basic bitch.
Yeah. Well. Basic what can you do?
Baby bitch.
What else do you want to talk about before I
That's it. Do
jump
your
in.
Thing.
Okay.
Feel you. Vibe out. Like,
vibe
just
out.
Like, let the emotions pour over your body.
Flow.
What are we doing? Go
I
for
don't
it.
Know. This week, I want to talk about someone, another person that I am really into right now. And, well, just a little backstory. I don't know if you guys follow us on Twitter or you saw my hate tweets about garbage human Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan, who was just trashed by association because he continuously gives Jordan Peterson a platform to spew his white supremacist, misogynist, closed-minded ideas. I'm not going to talk about Jordan Peterson too much today, but in his interviews, he's spoken about how women are not oppressed, how the patriarchy isn't actually a thing that exists in the world. And I think seeing the grasp he has on his listeners and, like, fake progressiveness that his fans, like, buy into, it really made me really upset with humanity. And so, I took a little break. But then I kept hearing about this woman, Jamila Jamil, she does the opposite for me. She gives me a lot of hope in humanity, and everything she says are things that I wish I could articulate myself. Stuttering when I say articulate, like, isn't that evidence enough? But her version of feminism is, in my opinion, really one to look up to. And I reached out to her a couple weeks ago, actually, because I want to interview her on the show, and I think it would be a dream, but she doesn't reach out to me because she's doesn't see my...
You can't slide into her
DMs. I know!
DMs.
She probably gets a lot of, like you're hot, or whatever.
Yeah, it's probably a bunch of dudes being like, hey, babe.
Yeah, well, if you guys want her to be on the show, I think me and Anna both think that you should tweet yes. at her and tell her about Ethnically Ambiguous, tell her that I need her on the show because I want to talk to her and tell her she's the best in person. But, tweet. Yeah, so go. Go tweet.
At Jamila Jamil, I think. What is it? At Jamila Jamil.
Yeah.
Just tweet at her.
At Jamila Jamil. JAMEELAJAMIL.
Yes.
Yes, go tweet at her. Tell her that we need her. And until then, while she gets her tweets and considers doing this amazing show, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about her. So she was born in London to an Indian father and Pakistani mother. She follows no religion and wasn't raised to follow one. She was born with congenital hearing loss and a condition called labyrinthitis, which is just hearing loss as she grows older, and she's had several operations to correct it. She states that she has 70% audibility in her left ear, 50% in her right ear. And at school, she says that she was bookish and shy. Her interests include biology and art, and as a teenager, she suffered from anorexia nervosa, which she's very open about, which I really appreciate, and she says that she didn't eat a full meal between the ages of 14 and 17. She stated she believes her eating disorder developed due to societal pressure, explaining that I was bombarded with a narrative that had no alternative. There were never any women who were celebrated for their intellect, and all my magazines were selling me weight loss products or telling me to be thin. Otherwise, I wasn't worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the age of 17, she was struck by a car, and she broke several bones and damaged her spine, and she was told that she would never walk again. But after steroid treatment and physiotherapy, she slowly recovered. And she cites this car accident as something that pushed her to towards recovery, and it changed her relationship with her body and literally knocked some sense into her, in her words. So after this, she taught English to foreign students in England and Oxford, and she worked as a model, photographer, and a fashion scout. Eventually, she appeared on the E4 show Music Zone in England at the end of 2008. And she began presenting T4 in 2009, which is another English program. And in January 2009, Alexa Chung left the morning TV show Freshly Squeezed, and Jamil succeeded her as the co-host. And she talks about this, even the way they talked about it being kind of damaging, because they kept, like, putting her in headlines being like, Alexa Chung knocked over by Jamila Jamil or whatever. And she said that, like, why couldn't she just stand next to this woman other than, like, knocking her down? And I like the way she talks about feminism, because she talks about how, like, why can't there be a million male rappers but only one boss bitch female rapper? Like, why can't we all exist and not be, because we're programmed to compete with each other and to knock each other over. And I really appreciate her openness about that. So in 2016, she moved to LA with no plans of acting, but instead to DJ and work presenting radio shows. She was contacted and told that Michael Schur, who he co-created Parks and Recreation, and he's an amazing writer, and he always is very inclusive in his shows, which I really appreciate. He was looking for a British actress for a new upcoming series, and although she had zero acting experience at this point, she was very wary of auditioning. She just went for fun because she wanted to meet Michael Schur because he was like one of her heroes. And she was later called for a second interview and then an audition, and then they called her to confirm she had landed the role. And this is the show ended up being called The Good Place, which is still on now. Yeah! And she's a regular cast member of the show, and it's all, she got a lot of fame from that show and from her starring role in that. And then late in 2015, she launched Why Not People, which is an organization and an events membership community or company dedicated to hosting live entertainment events accessible to disabled people. In March 2008, she launched an Instagram account called I Way, inspired by a photo that she came across online of the Kardashians and Jenners that, like, told the picture was like something that someone else had made that told on their bodies, it just said how much they weigh. And she describes how she thought they were like, maybe those numbers were like their income or whatever, but then it ended up just being weight. And so she describes I Weigh as a movement for us to feel valuable and see how amazing we are, look past the flesh on our bones. The account welcomes submissions of followers, non-edited or non-airbrush selfies using the hashtag IWay with a text describing the things that they might feel grateful for, grateful of. In part to this work, she's listed as one of BBC's 100 Women during 2018. And she also volunteers and she supported the Cultural Learning Alliance, and that promotes access to culture for children and young people. She just is very active in her community, and I really appreciate that. She's someone that, like, she uses her platform for the betterment of other people, not just herself. And, she's been very vocal. If you guys know who she is, you guys already know this probably, but for those of you who don't, she always goes after celebrities that promote detox teas or other weight loss supplements online, and I really, really appreciate her for that.
I saw that.
Yeah, just this morning, she was on the Today Show, actually, and she continued this crusade. She's called out celebrities like Cardi B, the Kardashians, Iggy Azalea, and she condemned all these celebrities for pushing diet products. When Al Roker asked her about her activism in body positivity, she slammed the teas, which she described as essentially bad laxatives. She says that they're false health advertising around them, and they're being flawed by celebrities who have no integrity or care for their fans, which is very true, because if they cared about their fans, they wouldn't promote something that was actual, just promoting an eating disorder, essentially. She says these drinks are laxative, they'll just make you go to the toilet, and that'll give you a flat stomach for about a day, and then the next day you'll have bowel complications for the rest of the time. And she says, I'm sure you don't want to talk about this in the morning, but unfollow those people, the people that sell you this toxic rhetoric about your body image or try to sell you toxic products that they don't know what's in them. They probably don't drink them themselves and they don't care about you. Unfollow and stay away and be safe. So she's very passionate and very, like, vocal about her beliefs. And this is after she's also been active about saying that airbrushing should be a crime, it is a crime against women, and she wants to make airbrushing illegal, and she understands this is like a dramatic stance, and she explains why in a second, but she's vowed to never stop coming for people, men and women, who perpetuate a gross culture of forcing women to remain small and doll-like in order to be accepted by society. So she's like, her advocacy against body shaming has seen her taking on magazines for overusing Photoshop and celebrities like the Kardashians for hawking weight loss teas and those weight loss lollipops, which I was pissed about. Kim Kardashian, like, was advertising a weight suppressing lollipop a couple months ago. Appetite suppressing lollipop. She was like, yeah, she deleted the post, but it was a lollipop that was, she said it was appetite suppressing. And she got a lot of backlash and she deleted it, but it's disgusting. You don't need more money. Like, how much money is enough money? Just at what point do these people care about the people that are consuming their content? I don't understand. But in a piece for BBC, she wrote about why she feels airbrushing is a crime against women and why it should be banned. She says that, I think it's a disgusting tool that has been weaponized predominantly against women and is responsible for so many more problems than we realize because we are blinded by the media, our culture, and our society. However, she's facing a lot of social media criticism for people that say that while she has a point, making it illegal wouldn't really help, And they really call her out for calling other celebrities because she's also someone that's conventionally beautiful. And they don't take her seriously because it's easy for her to say, like, I don't want my photos airbrushed when you're conventionally beautiful. So it's a little annoying that that's like a point of contention because she's at the very end of the day, like, she's still being assessed by her looks. And that's like the whole point of her fucking campaign. And she says, I know I'm being a little extra over this whole thing, but the war against women's bodies and general image is ongoing and out of control. Teen surgery, eating disorders, and self-harm are at an all-time high. So it's going to involve a big noise to fight back. Don't like it? Mute me. So she's on a mission to combat airbrushing, dietese, and other form of image-based oppression. She's best known for her role in The Good Place, as I said. But her efforts have garnered her a lot of attention. And the general complaint, that, like I said, is that it's pretty easy for her to say airbrushing should be duped or dumped because she's going to look fantastic either way. And sure, like, famous people, especially attractive ones, she's getting flack because it's not like she's pointing out something that is already known. And there's something uncomfortable about the critique of a famous woman which veers in the direction of, like, staying in your lane. Because it's something we've heard time and time again. Because this response is basically just silencing women's voices. And it's the silencing that often goes hand in hand with sexist objectification. In every area of life, young women who put their heads above the line that they have, they become lightning rods for scrutiny and belittlement. Another example of this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's been ridiculed for admitting that she's going to struggle to pay rent in Washington, and she's had her appearance mocked, and people say that she's just bragging about being a fresh-faced millennial.
Crazy how much they pick her apart.
Yeah, because she's a fucking woman.
Yeah.
And then a footballer, Ada Hegerberg, she recently became the first female winner of the Ballon d'Or, which is like this big soccer thing. And the presenter, Martin Solvig, asked her whether or not she could twerk. She had just given a speech about how she wants to inspire girls to believe in themselves. And that's what she got asked. I'm going to get more into stuff that Jamila's talked about after a quick commercial break. Okay, and we're back. I was talking about how people are criticizing Jamila and all these women that have achieved amazing success but are still not taken seriously. And these combative responses to women like Jamila, it reinforces a world view which states that women must be perfect, grateful, up to the minute, and undemanding, and anything that is not embarrassing. They're not allowed to make jokes or anything like that. And the failure to even take women like Ocasio-Cortez and Hegerberg, the soccer player I mentioned, seriously, it shows that you can be a woman that are all of these amazing things. You can be successful, you can be the top of your game, and still have to fight for respect. Silencing Jamila on these beauty standards because of the way she looks and saying that she's too pretty to have these kinds of opinions is as much of a problem of the patriarchy as the slimming teas that she rightly denounces. Caring more about how she looks while her point makes a lot of sense and not even paying attention to the point itself is playing into the hands of the negative forces she's trying to combat. She didn't choose her face or create the system that made it more likely that she would get jobs. Now that she's on TV, she's using her platform for something besides self-promotion, which is a choice that most in her position would have sidestepped, which is something that I really love. She's using her platform for the betterment of others, and the vast majority of people with any social media clout don't do that. She's evidently aware that she isn't entirely, like, digestible, and for, like, especially for her cause, and she apologizes routinely on her social media that she has fairly clear skin these days, and is forced to reiterate that her skin has been lightened and her nose has been narrowed in pictures, and that implications about her ethnicity have been made by airbrushing them completely, like, away. Like, she says that she's been made to be more white, and she stresses again and again that this has been really hurtful to her, and it's as if she's trying to quantify or prove herself to everyone, and it's just unfortunate that she has to do that in the first place. Much of the critique of Jamila for being superficial has been guilty of the same offense. Articles claim that she has, quote, more in common with the Kardashians than her audience, but they fail to mention that she worked as an English teacher or that she was almost completely deaf until the age of 12. She also has celiac disease, has endured cruel social media coverage in her 20s when her asthma medication made her gain significant weight, and she's described being bullied about her race and weight and suffering from severe anorexia in her teens. She's been very vocal about this. She's also always campaigning for disabled people, especially after being hit by a car. And being confined to a bed for almost 2 years, and she had to learn how to walk again. It just gave her more perspective. And so she's been through hardships, but no one should have to present the showreel of their hardships to validate their opinions. But that's the knee-jerk assumption that people have when they hear her having an opinion about anything. They just see her face and they dismiss her. But in a world where even the most impressive women are not taken seriously, any attempt toward positive change should be celebrated, or at the very least respected. Like, for example, a big example of recent history is Hillary Clinton. The most qualified human, woman or man, lost to the least qualified man. Like, Hillary Clinton, like, regardless of your opinion on her, as a politician, was very qualified to be president. But she lost to the least qualified man because she was a woman. In my opinion, that was the reason. There's another example of these impressive women not being taken seriously, whether she was too cold for a woman or not taken seriously because she dressed a certain way. It's just really unfortunate that we tear people down because of their gender. And so I really love Jamila Jamil, and she articulates everything that's in my brain that I wish I could say out loud, and I appreciate her immensely because, unlike the vast majority of people with any social clout, she uses her platform to draw attention to the things that actually matter. And I want to play this clip of her from another podcast that she was on, where she talks about her phrase, quote, double agent for the patriarchy, and why it's important to call out people who are furthering this narrative that the values of women are deemed important be based on the things that men want them to have. And it's important to call people out, especially if they're women. So I'm going to play this clip.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people criticize me recently about all of my I Weigh campaigning for saying, not a lot of people, just some people saying that I'm doing all of this to further my career. It's like, do you have any idea how much more money I would have if I were willing to be a double agent for the patriarchy and I would sell these weight loss, like, diarrhea teas or whatever it is that everyone's selling now, and all these weight loss gummies and flat tummy lollipops? Like, I would have loads of money. I'd own 10 houses. I'm definitely not... Or I'm arguing about film directors who are casting known convicted abusers. Like, I'm definitely biting the hand that feeds me. I'm not doing this for my benefit. I'm doing this
because it's the
little...
What do you mean by double agent for the patriarchy? Because that's a phrase you've used before, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to be careful about this.
Don't say what you think.
Okay. Well, I think it's dangerous when a woman is never allowed to pull up another woman to criticise another woman, and that woman is then called a bad feminist for ever criticising another woman, no matter what that woman does. It's like, she's a woman, she can choose whatever she does, she's allowed to do anything she wants. Now, that is a wonderful concept and idea, but if a woman is doing something that is damaging to other people, then that is someone who still should be spoken to about,
like,
that
Kim
thing
Kardashian,
and criticized, like Kim Kardashian, wait,
who you famously had a go at.
Who I did have a go at, not that famously, but I did. I have had words with the Kardashians, and I think when someone is doing something that is toxic and damaging to the people who they have a huge platform and they are speaking towards loads, they are speaking to loads of people. That person is saying something that is dangerous. We should all be allowed to say something about that. I don't think you can just attack that person. I don't think that helps anything.
But I think you have to offer constructive criticism. I mean, you said she was a toxic influence.
Yes.
Now, as a father of a 13-year-old, yeah, again, I would tend to agree.
Yeah.
What did you mean by it?
So the double agent for the patriarchy is basically just a woman who perhaps unknowingly is still putting the patriarchal narrative out into the world, is still benefiting off, profiting off, and selling a patriarchal narrative to other women. But it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, just because you look like a woman, we trust you and we think you're on our side. But you are selling us something that really doesn't make us feel good. You're selling us an ideal, a body shape, a problem with our wrinkles, a problem with aging, a problem with gravity, a problem with any kind of body fat. You're selling us self-consciousness. The same poison that made you clearly develop some sort of body dysmorphia or facial dysmorphia, you are now pouring back into the world. You're like recycling hatred. And I find that really dangerous, and I think it's unacceptable, and I don't care if you're a woman. I think constructive criticism is needed for us, for anyone to ever evolve. For our gender to evolve, we need some sort of constructive criticism, as long as we do it in a somewhat careful way.
So that's what I wanted to play from her. She's just so well spoken, just says everything I want to say. But yeah, I think that's kind of like why I call out Lena Dunham, or like why I am vocal about people that have had plastic surgery but deny it. I also really encourage you guys to follow her on social media, because she's always posting really amazing things. Like on this, she like posted on Twitter or Instagram this photo that compares how magazines, like a cover of a magazine with like a famous male actor, whether it's like George Clooney or whatever, in their 40s, and a woman in their 40s, and literally the man, he's allowed to have wrinkles on his forehead, he's allowed to have wrinkles everywhere, like he's a graceful older person, and the woman has not a single spot on her face. Like when Nicole Kidman was on a magazine recently, and she literally doesn't look like a human. Like her skin is just plastic. There's no, like, they've airbrushed her beyond recognition, and it's just the differences between men and women are just so astounding as far as the representation goes. And about plastic surgery, I want to read this one last thing I saw on her Instagram today. She responded to a comment from a follower that says she's curious what her thoughts on plastic surgery are. And so she has, Jamila responding. She says, "I have no judgment on people doing whatever they want to their bodies, but I feel strongly about them owning up to it, especially in the public eye when they are profiting from looks other people are holding themselves to the standard of. Do it if you want, but own it." And that's something that I agree with 100%. So that's my piece. And I'm obsessed with her, and I encourage you guys to also be obsessed with her, because she's a smart, smart person.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I was following her for a while and saw that she was posting about all those, like, different diet stuff, and that mm-hmm. was like, oh, she made a lot of good points about how it all just makes you shit, which I guess shitting is a weight loss technique?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It is. Laxatives have been abused by, like, people with eating disorders in the past.
Really?
Yeah.
You just shit a lot?
Yeah, it makes you lose water weight. It makes you physically look slimmer for the time being. Like, but it destroys your bowels, and it's just water weight. And that's not real. That's not how you get healthy, you know?
Jesus. I have to stop taking all these laxatives.
Hannah!
I'm just joking. I know. Laxatives. You think I want to shit?
More than I already do.
I know, I shit so much. I don't shit that much. I actually have started shitting so much less than since I started doing keto. And
oh, is that like a thing?
I think it's because I just don't eat. Oh, I mean, Hannah! I eat, but like I don't eat like I used to eat.
Right.
Like now I'm like, in the morning I have a coffee and a keto bagel. Or
mm-hmm.
I rarely eat my keto bagels, but like, I'll have eggs. I'll have two mm-hmm. eggs and like a few berries.
Yeah.
And then for lunch, I'll have like some basic bitch salad.
Mm-hmm.
Then for dinner, I have like an avocado spinach thingy I make.
We had a yummy lunch today. We got sushi today.
We had sushi today. No rice, baby. Yeah. Just eating so much
veggie sushi
fish.
For me. But yeah, sorry. Thanks for listening and being patient with that. Mm-hmm. Like,
you do realize I have to be here. No, I'm just joking.
Well,
I just not like I'm gonna be like, wow, Shireen, way to go, taking up all that time doing your section.
I mean, I just think it was important, and there's so much I want to talk about when it comes to her, and so I hope I chose the right things. Yeah.
I'm into it.
Thanks. I'm excited for what you're gonna talk about today.
I am gonna talk about a heavy topic.
I know.
It's personal.
I'm proud of you for even
so
thinking about it.
So, when I did Tamer Catan's podcast, they tried to growl at us. Just joking. The puppy started growling. They tried to bury us. Guys, it's topical for in the room.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, why do they keep tangenting on these random fucking things? So when I did the show, it got very raw. I started talking about my, like, okay, to give you some context, on this podcast, I literally, for the most part, only, well, also it's because when you guys hear my father call in, sorry, burps, you know how it is. When you hear my dad call in, like, it's all happy-go-lucky. My dad's, like, a fun, friendly guy, you mm-hmm. know? He seems like he's having a good time,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't come off as any, you know, he just comes off as silly,
mm-hmm.
heavily accented, and you know, that is a part of my father's relationship with me. My dad is like a fun, calm, you know, he can be he jokes, he's social, he likes to have fun, you know, he's charming. But like a lot, like most Middle Eastern kids, we have also, not all, but most, very dark relationships with our parents as well. And that's something I like really explored with Tamer and his mom on their podcast, like to a point where I was like crying because I was just like, you know, and it's something I don't, the darker side of our relationship is something I don't really try and like put on people very often. I'm not like, oh, well, you might like him, but, you know, and then start like throwing all the shit at him about him. But it's something that I only really explore in therapy, and then I try not to like get into it randomly with people because it's a lot, you know.
Hi, my name's Anna, by the way.
Yeah, my dad might seem chill, but you know, but it is like, that is the reality, is like I had a very, very difficult relationship with my father growing up. And it's something I want to talk about because I feel like I should just be like, guys, like we all go through it, like our parents aren't like perfect, and immigrant parents, they come into this world and, you know, they have a certain set of ideals where they were raised with in their own cultures and countries. And then they bring it here and they don't necessarily know how to evolve it into like the American culture, you know, like they raise you how they were raised.
Yeah.
And my dad's parents died when he was young. So he was raised basically when probably like early teens. So he was raised by his siblings who were all older than him. He was the youngest kid. And so he was always kind of a very, like, he had a structure and he was like, I'm going to grow up. I'm going to go to America. I'm going to get my degree in engineering. I'm going to raise my kids or whatever. And then, you know, they're going to also do what I do. And it's how it goes. Because all like immigrant parents just want you to be like engineer, doctor, lawyer, because they just want you to have a secure life and to be just stable. They just want stability, but they don't know how to be like, I just, you know, I want what's best for you. But that comes out in me being a very aggressive, sorry, your feelings don't matter, sorry, your interests don't matter way. So when I was growing up, my dad was almost like a totalitarian leader in our house. It was his way and that is it. And of course, I naturally rebelled because I am me and I just like couldn't deal with like being told that I couldn't like art or I wasn't allowed to take photography as an elective in high school or not even like elementary, junior high. And it was a struggle because like I am my dad in that weird way. It's like I'm just genetically a mix between him and my mom, but we have aspects of each other where I'm as stubborn as he is. Like, I want it to do what I want to do, and he wants me to do what he wants me to do. And it's like, when it comes down to, like, we're just, like, two peas in a family pot. I know, that was weird. but I, you know, growing up, I really struggled to be seen by my father, and my dad was a very hard man. He was just like, you're going to be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer. Mostly, he was mostly leaning towards engineer. He really wanted me to be an engineer, which, you know, I wasn't good at math. So it's kind of like, I just don't have the patience to sit here and become an ace at math. Like, I just don't want to do it. I like exploring. I like being outside. I like, you know, drawing. I like painting. I like just making things. Like, I was very crafty as a kid. I mean, I still am, I mean.
You are very crafty.
Anyway, I don't know why I'm, like, flexing for some reason. and that just wasn't okay. And my mom, being my mom, she's a very religious woman. She, you know, she's Muslim. She prays 5 times a day. She does her thing, you know, every Friday. She has her Quran study. But at the same time, the whole family wasn't Muslim. She was Muslim. So she had her own thing going on the whole time. So she really wasn't one to step in and try and stop my father from being so intense and like aggressive towards us in the sense of like how he felt things should go. And without that person to like step in and be like, hey, calm the fuck down. Your kids are like literally losing their minds. You know, it just kind of, it would escalate. Like, I would, when I was in seventh grade, I ran away from home for like a week.
Wow. And it was like,
I just like went to like the next town over to a friend's place. Whoa. But they couldn't find me because they didn't know. They didn't know what the fuck. They literally called the police. There was like they were looking for me. It was not a week. It was like a little less than a week, like 5 days, four or 5 days where I was gone until my friend totally ratted me out. She fucking gave me up, you guys. Probably also because she was like, your parents called my parents. And then my mom like really got mad at me. And so I told her that you were sleeping in my closet. And
were you?
Yeah. Whoa. Well, of course I was. I was running away, man. I was a free bird, dude. I was only allowed to come out during the day when her parents were at work. I was in seventh grade. I was like 13 or something. Yeah. 13 or 14. But I was like, dude, let me be. Like, you won't let me be, so I just want to go. And my dad has a way of talking down to you. Like, if you don't meet his standards, he just tells you you're just not good enough. He'll just be like, well, you're clearly not capable of doing anything, so you just feel shitty all the time. And it's kind of destroyed relationships within my, you know, other people in my family that I'm not going to get into because they'll get upset with me. It really... His hardness kind of broke the family in a weird way where now none of us are very close. Like, we're close in the sense, like, yeah, you know, like, I love my family, but, like, we don't spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. Like, we just text. Like, we all just text each other. Like, we have a text relationship where I'm like, hey, mom, what's up? She's like, yeah, nothing, what's up with you? And I was like, yeah, you know. Like, I don't. Like, I'm not in custom of calling my mother once a day and speaking with her and checking with her. My mom and I text once or twice a week to make sure we're both alive. Mm-hmm. And it's very, like, it's a very, just, I don't know, like, it's almost like a very just plain relationship. Like, it's not aggressive. It's not like where I'm like, my mom's my best friend. Like, when people say that, I'm like, tight.
What's that like?
Cool, dude. My mom sometimes responds to my text, but it's like a few hours later. and then, you know, the thing is, as my dad has gotten older and as he's kind of let go of the control, and based on my understanding, something Tamer Katan told me was that, and I never thought of it this way, like, their testosterone levels lower, so there's not as much, like
aggression.
Like, he's not as angry anymore. Like, or he doesn't try and get his, like, he truly, like, if you just go, no, dad, he's like, okay, he's like tired. He's not going to fight you on it. When before, if I was like, no, dad, he would get up and aggressively walk at me, like about to slap me across the face. And I'd be like, and like peace out really quickly and like run out of there. So it's, as he's gotten older and he's really kind of chilled out, like, we can have a relationship. But it also took me years of therapy through college and after college. At beginning in high school through college and then after college, which is probably like 10 years of therapy for me to decide that I would actually have a relationship with my father. He drinks a lot. He's kind of a dude who likes his wine. And he, when he has a certain, he had a certain way about him where you would be like, there was never a why. You were never allowed to ask why if he said no to you. Because he would literally, it was a thing that used to drive me crazy. He would say no, and you'd start to try and be like, well, and like try and argue your point. He would completely turn away from you and ignore everything you said for the rest of the night. Like, he wouldn't acknowledge you. And that would be the most thing of like, oh my fucking God. Because that's really what makes you snap, when someone truly like does not give a fuck about you. Like, and your feelings. Like, he cares, but at the same time, he doesn't care in the way that's needed. Mm-hmm. Like, I just need to be heard, and I'm not being heard. And that's always been, like, a struggle through my whole life. I just don't feel heard. Like, I'm just, like, literally being like, just hear me. And then when I just feel like someone is just, like, blowing me off, that's, like, when I truly just fold into myself. And I'm like, why is this happening again? Mm-hmm. Like, why can't I be heard? And that was, like, a huge thing I had to go through therapy to be like, that's not me, that's him. Like, that's on his shit. He saw what he did. He's seeing now that he can't have a closer relationship with me because of how he acted in my youth. So it's like, now I had to really separate myself from that. And that was, it took so long and so much of being like, I can't keep holding this weight on my shoulders of being like, why wasn't I good enough for my father? When it's like, that's not what it was. I was just a kid. I was just living my life. Like, I had no way to give him what he wanted because I just wasn't that kid. Like, he had an idea in his mind of what his children should be, and we just didn't become that. But how is that our fault? We're just, we were who we were. And so overcoming that was a big part of just trying to maintain my relationship with him. And I guess I just want to be like, you can do it too. You're capable of having these relationships, no matter how they made you feel, how alone they made you feel, how basically like rejected in that sense they made you feel. Like, you can get there. I mean, it's obviously your choice if you want to get there, but you're never alone when you think, why is my parent so intense and evil and not willing to hear me out? It's not you. Yeah. It is 100% them. That's their shit. They never learned how to deal with the shit that they're dealing with. Like, mental illness is not a thing in most immigrant communities. It's just not a thing. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of like look at yourself and realize, like, well, I'm going to fix this for me and not try and make it, a thing where I have to fix them, because you don't. Yeah. You don't need to fix anyone but yourself.
And you really can in the end.
You can. I did it. Now I have a completely okay relationship with my dad.
No, but you can't fix other people. I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't fix anyone. You can only fix yourself.
Yeah.
So on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. All right, we're back. Before the break, I was talking about my relationship with my father and how it's...
It's interesting. I related to not everything you said, but a lot of what you said, because my dad was the same way when it came to asking why. Because I was the kid that asked why the most, and he was just like, just follow my rules. Like, like I say what, like, I tell you to do something, and that's the way it is. There's no why.
There's no follow-up.
Yeah, there's no why.
It is what it is. And that's so hard when you're someone who's trying to explore and understand.
Yeah. No, but it is true. I think, I mean, something I have a question about is, when I was going through a lot of stuff, I was the kid that had the most arguments with my parents, and I was really angry and really sad. They forced me to go see a psychiatrist against my, like, I didn't want to go, but I was a minor at the time, so I had to go, and I was very defensive. I did not want to be there. I wanted to be on my terms. So I never even considered therapy when I was younger, and I think it would have been beneficial to do it on my own, but I just didn't. So I've been seeing psychiatrists on and off since then. But how did you know that it would be beneficial to you when you were in high school? I think that's so...
Well, after I ran away, I think it kind of opened my mom's eyes a little to keep an eye on me, basically, to be like, oh, this one's going to, is losing her mind.
Yeah.
And so after that, my mom was always weird. Like, how she would deal with it is, like, I would cry in my room and just feel so alone and just be, and I wouldn't come to dinner. I wouldn't leave my room for like days, because I'd be like, there's no point. I don't want a relationship with my father. He sucks. And my mom would come in and be like, look, just keep your head down, do your work, and one day you'll leave and you won't have to deal with this anymore. But until then, just keep your head down. And that used to drive me crazy and be like, why am I not allowed to feel? Like, they'd be like, don't cry. You appear weak.
Yeah.
Crying is weakness. When I'd be like, no, this is the only way I can get all this like built up anger and emotion out, because you guys refuse to acknowledge that I have any sort of emotion.
Yeah.
Like, I was depressed. I had anxiety because just I had no outlets.
Yeah.
And I think my mom was the one who initially was like, well, go talk to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Go see a therapist.
You can't talk to me.
Yeah. Because she was just kind of like, I don't know how to help you.
Yeah. My parents were the same. They said, like, what do we do to help this person? Mm-hmm. Like we are at our wit's end. And
yeah.
It's sad because they never learned how to process their own emotions. Because as you said, they weren't raised that way.
Yeah. They were raised to just, like, shut up and continue on with life.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
And it's interesting because a lot of times when I was growing up, I would cry when I was mad. I would cry when I was frustrated. I would cry when I would get into arguments with them. I just, like, couldn't contain myself, because that's, like, the only way I could show them that I was upset.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
And it would be crazy because I could literally, like, I could, like, pass out from how much I was crying. Mm-hmm. And my dad would just be like, get out of here. You're bothering me.
You're being sensitive.
Yeah.
That was the thing that, like, I heard constantly growing up. You're being sensitive.
Exactly. It's like, don't be so sensitive.
Yeah.
And it's like,
why? I was the sensitive one.
Like, why am I not allowed to be sensitive? Yeah. Like, I can't. I have so much bubbling up inside me.
If men were allowed to be sensitive and allowed to show their emotions, there wouldn't be all this toxic masculinity everywhere.
It's true.
It's just unfortunate.
And I literally felt like I had no... There was no recourse. Like, I was suicidal. Like, I was like, what's the fucking point? Like, these people don't, like, it got to a point where I was like, they wouldn't care if I died. Like, I had one suicide attempt in high school, and I think that was the thing where my mom was like, you gotta go. Yeah. You have to go. Because I took all these pills my dad had. Because my dad at the time, also I learned, like, 2 years ago, I learned that my father had a fucking pain medication addiction. What? After he hurt his back, and he was fucking pilled up. I hate to say pilled up. He had a problem. He was drinking and he was taking pain medications because he hurt his back, and he just had an issue, and that probably more than anything numbed him out even more to our bullshit.
It sounds like he was an addict.
Yeah, yeah. He was just in his own fucking world and truly fully not here for us. Like, he just was like, no, these are my rules, and that's that. And that, I learned that he told me that 2 years ago in Iran, after his brother died. He was like, you know, I should probably tell you, like, this is what was going on. And I was like, what the fuck? It's like, your brother had to die for you to, like, bring this up to me? And one thing after, the point was, I took those pills and I tried to kill myself, but my mom, like, found me and, like, made me vomit and then was just like, what the fuck is going on? Because it's, like, all under her own roof. And she's just kind of like, I was like 16.
I didn't know that. I just don't think about it that much.
It's something that I've come to terms with in therapy, that I'm like, oh yeah, we've all tried to kill ourselves, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like one of those things. But it's real though. It's like, you're not alone. We've all been in those situations where we're like, oh fuck it. Like, I ain't doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's, sometimes you get pushed to that thing, and it all truly is like within that moment. Like, I don't think I woke up that morning like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, I think I was just like, it just happened. Like, it was just like, I was like, you know what? In that moment, fuck it. That's it. I'm done.
That's how,
like,
it usually happens.
Yeah.
It's been studied, and like, that's how it usually happens. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting turning point, I think, for my mom. Like, I feel like she never told my dad that happened, because my dad wasn't home at the time. And it just, I don't think to this day he knows that happened, because I just never told him. And I think my mom, being my mom, was like, you know what? I'm a good, like, you know, Middle Eastern woman. Keep a straight face. Don't let this get out. Yeah. Just take
care of it.
Her reputation
is important.
Move it on. She's going to go to therapy. It will fix everything. And it was just like, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, like, a big thing, like, I talk about this on Tamer's podcast. Going to Iran was always very therapeutic for me, because I like to be around my family. Like, literally my blood. It was 4 or 5 years ago. I went to Iran. I went for a cousin's, I kind of went around the time that I knew my cousin's birthday was, because I, like, wanted to be with her for her, like, 30th birthday. And I went there, you know, I had broken my toe playing soccer indoors on my uncle's house, because that's my fucking life, with the two-year-old who was like, play soccer with me. And I was like, okay, and then inside, and then my toe jammed into a fucking piece of gold furniture, because that's
what
fucking life in Iran. And so I got all fucked up, and I was like crying, and my dad was being a dick to me. And basically, like, my entire Iranian family witnessed this, and it was a whole thing. And a little Persian man in a cafe fixed it for me. It's a great story. One day you'll hear it. So I was, like, in the bathroom one day. It's like a few days later. And my little cousin comes and knocks on the door. Not the two-year-old, there's a different cousin. Two-year-old being like, father would like to see you. Oh, no. So my little cousin comes over and he knocks, and he's like, oh, like, uncle wants to see you. And I was like, huh, okay. And this is my uncle, who was, like, the patriarch of the family. He was my father's oldest brother. This is the one who died 2 years ago. And it was, yeah. He was this little old man. He was, like, 7 or so years older than my... No, maybe a little older than my... 7 years older than my dad. And which is funny, because my dad's around 6'1". I think he's shrinking. He says he's 5'10 now, because he's shrinking in his old age, which was okay. His brother was, like, 5'3". It was the weirdest thing. But this little 5'3 man was, like, the head of the family.
Yeah.
And he's the one that, like, truly took care of my dad and when he was young. And they, so he's sitting in the deep, dark corner of his living room. And what he would do, basically, his son died at 17 in, like, a freak accident. He's the one whose name is tattooed on my thumb. And I've talked about him on the show before. And since his son died, like, I don't know, 15 years ago about. I don't even remember. He really, that was probably like 20 years ago. He basically like stopped talking. Like he would talk, but only if necessary. Mm-hmm. Like he truly used to be like this vibrant, just like loud, like my dad, like alcoholic. It was just crazy. And now he was just silent, still an alcoholic, mm-hmm. drank so much. These dudes in my family drink so much. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And he would just chain smoke cigarettes. And he would smoke cigarettes to, like, all the ash would stay. And then this giant line of ash would just fall on his sweater vest. And it always used to drive me crazy because I'd be like, Amu, like, fucking clean up. Yeah. Like, just ash the fucking cigarette, dude. Like, it's not hard. And it would just be like his little tiny sweater vest. He was just so cute. My Amu Habib. But yeah, he was sitting in the deep corner of the room, and like I like went over there, and he was like, you know, like I understand. And I was like, oh, what is he talking about? And he's like, oh, I get it. Like, your dad's a very hard man. I get it. He's been like that his whole life. Since our parents died, he's just been a very hard man. And in Farsi it translates to like sakhte. Like he's tough. He's a tough guy, and he's doesn't relent easy. Like he's just Mm-hmm. He won't just give in to you, and he's always been this way his whole life, and I understand how you feel, and if you ever need anything, you just come to me. Like, I'm always here. And that was so huge for me to just have someone acknowledge my situation, because my whole life everyone would be like, don't be so hard on your dad, he just loves you and he's raising you and he's your father and he wants what's best for you. And you're just like, yeah, totally. Like you can't, you're like, you hear it so much, you're like, god, fuck off. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares? Like, the guy's an asshole. Why can't anyone acknowledge this guy's an asshole? And for my uncle, his older brother, to be like, yeah, he's a fucking asshole, I know, he's always been like that, he needs to chill out, and I get it, was like, it was huge. It was like him acknowledging emotion in a way that is not normally acknowledged. And it's not a thing that anyone had ever done for me. And that was so, it was just wild to me. Like, it blew me. I felt like just a weight had been lifted from my shoulders, where I was like, thank you. Like, thank you for saying that. Thank you for just acknowledging, like, just seeing me and seeing that I'm this emotional being, that I just needed someone to just care.
Yeah.
To just point out, like, yeah, your dad is like that, but you made it through and you will be okay, basically.
Yeah.
And that was like a turning point in my relationship with my father, because then I could kind of see him in a different light. Because I'd be like, yeah, you struggle through your own shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are the way you are for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, you lost your family so young. You needed to, like, create this structure in your life, and there was no turning back. And I don't know, that was a big moment, and my uncle passed away 2 years ago, and that was, honestly, like, the minute I heard he passed away, I heard from an Instagram DM, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. I, like, bought my ticket to Iran. I was like, I'm out of here. I'm going to see my family, because that man was so, and I, you know, I grew up with him. He was my uncle, you know? He was a very important part of my life, and it was a, I don't know, it was a lot. It was a lot to lose him, because it was very sudden death, so it was kind of, I don't know. It was just a very important moment. That, like, even just, like, discussing that in therapy, like, it was a huge, like, I don't even know. Like, it was a turning, yeah, it was just a turning point in my life that, mm-hmm. for my relationship with my father, that, yeah. And I guess I just, all I'm saying is, we go through it. We really, truly go through it to get to where we are, and you shouldn't feel stuck, like it'll never change, because it will.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here. I talked to my dad. I talked to him this morning. He's giving me his old car.
Well, he is?
Yeah, he's always fucking buying new cars. The man has
a
problem.
Wait, what kind of car?
It's just a RAV4.
Whoa.
He's giving me his RAV4. He told me this morning.
Dude, fuck yeah.
I mean, it's just a RAV4.
He's
not giving me the BMW, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh,
guess
my
who
God.
Gave the BMW to? If you're listening, you know who you are.
Oh,
it's a sibling of mine.
Well, I'm really proud of you.
I didn't get the BMW, guys. That's the whole point of the story. Is I didn't get that BMW.
To be fair, you're the youngest.
That's true.
They might get priority.
If you saw the car he's buying now, you're like, do you really need that? Anyway, we'll talk after.
I don't know. I'm really proud of you for, like, wanting to talk about this and for talking about it on Tamara's podcast. And I think it's really important, and I know you don't talk about it enough, or not enough. I know you don't try to talk about it purposely, but like even when it comes to your mental, like your experience with mental illness and suicide, and I think it's so important to hear those things because people listen to them and they're like, "Oh, she's still here. I can be
yeah,
here too.
I am still here, you and know? I have a relationship with my father after all that. Anyway, yeah." So.
It just takes time.
It's possible to grow.
And growing is a huge part of life. And if you're willing to work on yourself, then I think it's really important to like make those steps to be like, maybe I would benefit from therapy. Maybe I would benefit from moving out of the house. Maybe I would just know the things that I need to do to take care of myself because I want to still be here, but I don't want it to be like this.
Yeah. That thing is, like, I think when we're young, we get stuck and we don't realize, like, we are going to continue to evolve mm-hmm. and that we can evolve. And
because it feels so, it feels so, I don't know, like, it's impossible.
Just, yeah, because you're young and you don't get it. Like, even today when you're not young, it's just, when you're in that mindset, it's easy to forget mm-hmm. that you're kind of starting to get into your like anxiety depression bubble.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to burst out of that. It really yeah. is. Cause I still get sad.
Oh,
obviously.
I get sad all the time.
I'm like,
and it feels
very
like
depressive.
I can't ever crawl out of it.
Yeah. It feels like it's the end.
Yeah.
And it's not like
I mean, for me,
every time I get out of it.
Yeah. But for me, it's frustrating thinking like how much longer will I be sad? Like,
yeah.
Like how, like, not that I feel like I'm so sad now, but I'm sad because I'm so tired of feeling this way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's the hardest for me is just, I thought at this point I would have been better or more than this kind of thing. And then I have to talk myself off of that ledge because it's just like a cycle of negativity.
Right.
Just to remind myself that like I have made strides, even if they're small and even if I can't see them all the time, but no, it's hard for me to not feel a little pointless
mm-hmm.
because I don't know. I want to be the person I knew when I was younger, but I also thought when I was younger that I would be okay now. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah. Cause you're like, I will get older and I will get over all this.
Yeah.
But the thing is like it follows you through your whole life.
It's a permanent thing. It's like addiction. Yeah. It's like once you're an addict, you're always an addict. Like, and I do have these personality like traits. I'm not saying I'm an addict right now, but I am saying that I feel the same way about addiction that I do eating disorders, that I do with mental illness. It's something that you have to live with constantly and battle all the time.
Yeah.
And it does get easier if you try.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you just stick around long enough to give it a chance.
I mean, that's how it is. And I think a part of it is figuring out what works for you.
Yeah.
Like you might, you know, like I used to take antidepressants, but I'm also a pill popper. I am just like my dad. Like if I get a pill, like I'm popping it. I've always been that way. I would say it's easier to pop a pill than to drink a full beer because you just get fucked up.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge, you know, like I've struggled with addiction to like drugs and stuff my whole life. So I kind of realized like I can't really take medications because if you give me Xanax, I'll take it right away. You know, like I just want to be high.
No, that's
and not
the,
think.
I feel the same, and I'm terrified of that part of myself because I'm so easily addicted to things, and that's why I it's a test of my self and like my self control to not be someone that buys me all the time, to not be someone that drinks all the time because mm-hmm. it's an all or nothing for me. Like mm-hmm. if I start, I won't stop.
Yeah,
and that's why I usually just don't do anything.
I mean, that's kind of how I can be too.
And I would like to actually, maybe we can have an episode where we talk about our experience with drugs or like our experience with things that, because I do like certain things. I think some drugs, like when it comes to mushrooms or acid, like they can make you think about things you would have never thought about.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, I'm just like, I cannot wait to do shrooms next. Like, and that scares me. And that's that because, I don't know, it's just, I don't want to, it's like when I was really depressed and like years ago, I had really bad depression and I was taking, and I still take sleeping pills because I have like really bad insomnia also, but now I'm like low-key addicted to these sleeping pills because I'm terrified of having insomnia again. But when I first started taking them, I would have these, and I still have these very vivid dreams because like one of the side effects of it is just having these very vivid
very you go deep into REM, yeah, probably
because it's just like extreme dreams.
You're
always
sleep, man.
Yeah, and I've always had very weird dreams, but the pills accentuated them and emphasized them, and I started looking forward to sleeping more than I was being awake.
Wow.
And I was like, oh fuck, I'm super depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's a dangerous cycle, and I think holding yourself accountable and knowing what's good and bad for you, so it's harder than it sounds, but it's important.
Yeah, I kind of had to make the choice. I was like, well, I'm not going to take pills anymore. Like, the only pill I take is birth control now, and that, you know, because it's just nothingness, mm-hmm. it doesn't really affect me. It has such a weird thing where I'm like, I don't know, but I just chose not to take antidepressants anymore to not just be more on. I was like, you got to narrow it down. You can't be on all these pills. And, you know, every time I would get frustrated because I felt like it wasn't working. And then they would be like, okay, well, here, let's add another one.
No,
I was like,
exactly.
Okay, well, I need to just not do pills. And I had to basically start being as active as possible mm-hmm. to keep my mood settled.
Yeah. You have to be active. You have to talk to people. Yeah. You have to. I mean, I totally understand how you feel about that, though, because, like, if it doesn't work, they're just, like, adding one pill after the other. At one point, I was taking, like, five things, and I was like, I feel crazy.
guys, come on.
And I still have that, like, I have, like, a seven, those, like, old people pill things that, like, have, like, day of the weeks on mm-hmm. them. I would use those.
Yeah.
Just because I had so many things, and I would set it out on every Sunday or whatever day of the week it was and just, like, plan out my fucking pill week mm-hmm. and, I mean,
if that works for you.
No hate to those that do benefit from that, from medication, but it's just, it's daunting.
Everyone.
It's daunting when that's the only answer your doctor will tell you. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's not working here. Let's add these three things to it.
Yeah.
And then you go to another doctor and he's like, well, I disagree. We should add this.
Yeah.
And that's a huge reason why I'm very untrusting of psychiatrists. And like the ones I do like, I have vetted, and I have seen them for a while. But the vast majority of them I have a hard time seeing because mm-hmm. I just don't think they're, and that's hard because I have a lot of doctors in my family, but like, I just don't feel that it's a genuine, like, it takes a lot for me to think someone's genuine.
Yeah.
And like, oh, are you in it for me or are you in it for the money? Are you in it for me or are you in it for just like solving your problem with me taking a pill?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
I think it's always what works
and I still
for you,
take antidepressants.
We're all different.
And I've gone on and off of them. And right now I've been taking one and it's like, I feel okay. It's just, I hadn't taken any of the most of this year because I thought it was affecting my libido and I have like other things I wanted to experience something that I've never experienced and it didn't happen. And I thought being on antidepressants was affecting that, but it turns out that I would rather be a little bit more stable than like have an orgasm mm-hmm. to be blunt. Mm. And maybe
I honestly thought that's what you were talking about anyway, but
yeah. But next time we'll talk more about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I would be down if you're down to talk more openly about like drugs.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a fun topic.
It's what I know the best. No, I'm just joking. But yeah.
But we could talk about the first time I did acid, which was with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we sat on that stoop.
I'm the scumbag friend, as Miles called
me. Oh my god, but you're not the scumbag friend.
I'm the friend that's like, hey, you want to do drugs?
You were like the cool friend that I was like, I want to do good acid. And I was like, I should ask this person because she's cool.
Oh boy, I've been labeled. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, we can do that.
If you guys are into it, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, while you're at it, rate and review us on iTunes. 5 stars, no less. If you don't have iTunes, go to Facebook and write a review and rate us 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B. On Instagram at ethnicallyambig, A-M-B-I-G. Please buy our merch on TeePublic. I believe there's still 30% off.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, do it. It's a great holiday gift. Mm-hmm. We have stuff up there. Maybe we'll come up with something else. You never know.
But we have a lot of styles, I will say. Compared to other stores, we're like,
we're popping.
Thriving.
Mm-hmm.
We're thriving.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier.
And I'm on Twitter at ShiroHero666, SHEERO HERO, and on Instagram at ShiroHero.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. We're kicking it. I don't know what that was. Okay.
As always.
Until next week, you can bite that ass?